Борись.
So starting off, shouting out our friend from Pacific Ring Sports. He's over living in Thailand, fighting out of Phuket Singha. Andrew Kapuro, Southpaw Cap on Instagram, won a decision at LWC Super Champ Thai Channel 8 over at Lumpini. Won his fight. It was a rematch, three-round decision. Showed some really good trust in the power of his left kick. So he's showing that more because he's known for his left hand. He's knocking people out with that, but now he's like using that left kick. So congratulations to Andrew.
Nice.
Also, shout out to some of our students at Hapkido USA's Golden Pizza Muay Thai, Carolyn, Joe, and Nathan. They're going to be participating at the Muay Thai Development League exhibition matches. Sick. Over at Emeryville this Saturday. We just got done with some training tonight. They're in the middle of their tapering week. So they're excited about that. We're excited for them. And big shout out to our host, Sean, making his return to jiu-jitsu competition this week at Jiu-Jitsu World League in Stockton this Saturday. So that's the thing that everybody wants to know about. Sean, how is training going? Are you tapering this week? What's going on with you as you leap, as you go into this Saturday in your big return to competition?
So far, so good. Training was good yesterday and today. Today was my last like hard sparring, jiu-jitsu sparring rounds. So it went pretty hard today. And then tomorrow I teach the little babies and then I go back just to kind of fine tune everything on Friday. And then weigh in on Saturday. My weight's pretty good right now. I'm at about 163 pounds, which is probably one of the lightest weights I've been in a really long time. But
ooh, lean, mean machine.
Yeah. So today ramped up the training. Feel good. I noticed that now there's about three people, including myself, in my bracket. So anxious to see how it plays out. And
they'll probably, I know Jiu-Jitsu World used to do this a lot in the past. Hopefully they still do, especially if there are only three people in a division. They usually allow a round robin. So everybody gets at least two matches, which would be great.
Agreed. Very, very good.
So hopefully that's what they do. Sometimes maybe a competition won't do that because maybe the referees get all tired and they don't want to work another match. So hopefully they're feeling spry. They're feeling jumpy. What time do you like to get to the venue where you're going to compete at, Sean?
Well, I wish Jiu-Jitsu World League would be be kind to the upper and older belts, but unfortunately they put us last, I think. And when
you're going to be like at the end of the day,
pretty much. But my wife and I are going to drive up kind of early just to, just so my weight's on point. And I don't really have to like cut or anything like that. I could probably
when do you weigh in?
It's either.
Is it done like right before you step on?
No, actually, you can actually weigh in hours before. It just has to be at least an hour and a half prior to your match. So,
Okay.
I'm going to try to go as early as possible so I can go have like a burger or like something that, you know, I've been wanting to eat because I'll have so much time anyway. Because I don't anticipate me and my other teammates to be competing until like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. So,
okay. Oh man, you're gonna be out there all day.
Pretty much.
So so walk me through that. How do you handle that waiting game? Here's the one thing about a lot of people who maybe don't compete, don't understand, is that to get onto the mat and to get into the ring, there is almost an entire day that's eaten up by you just sitting around.
Yeah.
And just dicking around and just like shooting the shit and just trying to like find a way to rest and control your nerves. So walk me through what's the plan in terms of what you're going to do during your downtime. What are you going to do to kind of prep yourself for go time?
Well, my teammates and I were talking about it. It was my teammate, Evan Bishop, which I agree with his process, because he was like, yeah, you can weigh in and like sit there and watch the competitors compete. But for him he said that watching people compete kind of gets him anxious. And I'm the same way. Mm. I'd rather not see anything until I maybe like an hour before I have to compete, only because, you know, like you start squaring people up. Oh, is that the guy? Is that the fucking guy? Or like, mm-hmm. you know, you just.
Yeah. I size people up like that too. And just add a little bit to the anxiety.
So, you know, we're probably going to just weigh in, grab something to eat, hopefully take a nap or something like that. Or I don't know, until we're ready to go. I'm just going to stay away from the venue for a while, like an hour before.
While you're staying away from the venue, are you going through anything in your head in terms of visualization, or are you trying to keep your mind put your mind onto anything except jujitsu?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both. I mean, visualization, I think, is probably very good, to the point where, you know, you want to know and expect, you want to know what to expect, and you want to know what to do, instead of like figuring it out on the fly when you're actually out there. So I do know that I'm going against someone from 10th Planet that I've seen before also. And he's, you know, he's a pretty well-rounded competitor. Like, he competes pretty much at all the big tournaments, and he's a big rubber guard guy. So we're trying to prepare for that. So I'm, you know, super anxious.
Is there a part of you that thinks like on that day that you'll look up do some last minute footage hunting for your opponents to kind of like get a glimpse at what to expect when you go in there, or is all that work already done?
I think it's all already done. And, you know, for me, this is just a barometer of where I'm at currently. Like, I'm not walking in there wanting to win, or like, I'm not expecting much. I just want to get in there.
That.
I know. I just want to get in there and, you know, get the feel for competition, because the bigger picture is Nogi Worlds towards the end of the year anyway. So I just got to get used to competing and getting used to, you know, the feel of how the pressure and all this other stuff is, and going 100%. And so I'm just using this as like a, you know, kind of like lose my virginity type thing.
Good for you. We should all lose our virginity once in a while. So let's say it's an hour before you're about to go, or half an hour before you're about to go. You have a set warm-up / stretching routine, something you do to prepare the body. And what is that for yourself? Like, what do you do?
So I'll just go through my usual stretches, you know, make sure my hammies are good, make sure my legs are good. And then Travis, my coach, said something very interesting. He was like, you know, it's better to go in tired, or not tired, but like already warm, than to not go in warm at all, because you roll better when you're a little bit tired. So I was like, okay, well, I might as well you know, get a sweat going prior and go in there.
How are you going to do that? How are you going to generate that sweat? Like, we'll probably just do exercises or movements you like to do?
We'll probably do a bunch of flow roll, like maybe like, you know, 30-40%, just to get the sweat going. And then,
and so for the non-jiu-jitsu folks, what Sean is talking about, it's kind of like a practice match. Mm-hmm. That you're not really fighting each other.
It's,
you're
like just dancing. Kind
of staying connected with your opponent, just get a sense of movement, sense of your weight distribution, getting used to contact with another human being.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, man. You have your nutrition lined up for that day. You mentioned earlier, like after you weigh in, maybe you want a hamburger or something.
Yeah.
But you have like a whole thing set up where it's like, okay, I'm going to eat a certain amount of carbs because it'll kick in around this time and I'll need it for my match. Do you think that far ahead?
Pretty much. I mean, in the morning, I'll probably just have a really light, super light breakfast just to get me to the venue, because it's, gosh, man, it's almost like a 2-hour drive.
So I need to fuel up just to make sure I make it to the match.
So I'm probably just going to, you know, eat something real light. And then once I weigh in, I'll probably gorge on some high calorie stuff and get some carbs in me so I could, honestly, man, this is probably 10 or 15 minutes max of like hard sparring. So the way I look at it is like, it's just like a sparring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. this, it just happens to have surrounded by hundreds of people.
Yeah, exactly. And, but who knows if anyone's going to stick around.
Being refereed by someone you've never met before and they don't know you and they're not like going to try to coach you right there.
Yeah.
So that is this Saturday in Stockton. What's the name of the venue that it's going to be at, Sean?
Stockton Arena.
Stockton Arena. Mm-hmm. Man, that just sounds cool. Are you going to do you have a special music playlist that you have that kind of helps you get into the right mindset?
Oh, yeah.
You
go, a lot of Chris Brown. One of
those people? Oh, a lot of what?
Chris Brown. A lot of Chris Brown.
Oh, a lot of Chris Brown.
Yeah. A lot of Chris Brown. I know it's just been.
Oh, you know what I like to listen to get ready for jujitsu? The gentle art. Listen to the music of a domestic batterer. So yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but I just think the image just kind of maybe giggle a little bit. But all right,
I love his music. Man. I don't like his antics outside.
But I'm not gonna judge, Sean. I'm not judging. You. But hey, man. We here at the Mighty Beast. All our listeners, we're rooting for you. We want you to do well. Just to give some positive reinforcement, but not to give yourself too much hype and not to get too expectations too high. What would be your ideal victory?
Man.
Like what move, what submission would you want to pull off that would be like, oh my God, I'm the greatest grappler in the world?
Twister.
The twister? If you pull off a twister?
I mean, I've pulled it off before, but like not against anyone high level, but I've been finding myself.
And that move is going to be legal in your division for this competition?
I think cervical crank.
Something you should know, yeah.
I was looking at the rules the other day and I think I'm okay. Like I know.
Okay.
I think our division is okay to do it.
I think they've loosened rules for things for moves like that as well. Sure. So, dude, man, if you get the twister, dude, I think that's a new episode T-shirt we got to come out with. If you land the twister,
dream finish. So that would be the dream finish.
Oh man, okay. So, dude, obviously that'll be the first thing we're gonna ask about in next week's episode is how you did and to walk us through it. So we're super excited for you.
Thanks, man.
So on that note, in terms of submissions, I have a kind of a hypothetical to present to you and to our listeners. And guys, we want you to hit us up, let us know your thoughts on this. I'm at Hopkey1 on Instagram. Sean_Pierre_ MMA judging, we've had a little bit of discussion about that. And looks nowadays, the judges are looking at damaging and impactful moves, moves that have the potential to end and change a fight. Included in those moves are submission holds. So sometimes if you really got a deep guillotine attempt, the guy happens to manage to get out and maybe lands a few punches on you while you're on top and the round ends, judges see that the person who almost got the guillotine won that exchange.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me because I don't think that was the case a couple of years ago.
Nope.
I'm curious, what do you think, Sean, is one of the more impactful submission attempts in MMA that gets the most respect from judges in the sense of like what submission attempt without it having resulted in a tap out affects the opponent more?
I feel
you
like
what, I mean? What do you think should affect the opponent more?
You know, from what I've seen, especially in the last maybe like 8 or 9 events, I noticed that during grappling exchanges and stuff like that, a lot of submission attempts don't really get the love that, jiu-jitsu people would give them. But the one that I noticed that I honestly think sways the judges is like a rear naked choke. Like if someone has your back and you're super close and you've got the freaking bite and you've got it under the chin. But then again, say he escapes or say, he's able to counter it. I just feel like they give like an advantage. They would give the advantage to that guy that's actually putting the guy in the rear naked choke. What about you?
Yeah, I think, off the top of my head, that's the kind of answer that I come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Anything where you're behind somebody and you're showing positional advantage and you're threatening with something that's devastating, I think that should get like a lot of credit. We have seen some instances in the past where it seemed like what is considered almost a rear naked choke.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because sometimes people like, okay, like the arm is underneath the opponent's chin, it's around their neck, but they haven't really connected the hands solidly.
Yeah.
So are judges still giving credit for that? You know what I'm saying? Right? Sometimes it feels like they don't. Sometimes it feels like they don't. Sometimes it feels like the person who's about to get choked, they get up or they're able to reverse, they turn around, land a few punches, and now they win the exchange. So I'm curious to see like how judges are able to tell what is a super impactful submission attempt. So let's stay with that. Would you then say then rear naked choke is the most impactful? Like it's the one that saps the most energy or does the most damage in an MMA fight. If you're judging an interaction between two fighters, that would be the choke. That would be the submission you would go to and give the most credit to.
I think so, because it's also, I mean, if you think about just taking the back in general, that's probably one of the worst positions that you can be in besides like mount, right? But at least with mount, I mean, there's ways to escape and there's ways to escape from some of the submission attempts as well. I feel like when you got someone on your back and they're going for rear naked choke, that's like, it's one way traffic, right? It's like, mm-hmm. they're definitely going for your neck.
Let me ask you, what is the most exhausting submission to defend against in your experience? Like what gets the blood going? What gets the heart rate going up super fast?
I think it's
in my opinion, like any kind of choke has the same quality as like a body blow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
So it's like, it fucking hella wears you out. But at the same time, like if someone has a big, like a good grip of your heel, they're about to get like a good heel hook on you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's any other submission that gets their heart rate up higher than trying to make sure that doesn't secure itself. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I mean,
what's your take on that?
I agree with that, but I think the one submission that gets me is probably like a Darce. Like that for some reason, like Darces are hard for me to defend only because there's also transitions to other submissions during that submission. But like if you're not flattening out or if you're not like attacking the hand somehow, like that's the one that like gets me all the time.
Do you think Darces get enough respect in MMA judging?
No, I don't think so.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's just one of those situations where judges have to just go through continuing education to just see like where fighters are super in trouble. Guys, again, hit me up on Instagram, Hopkey1. I'm super curious to hear what all of you think about what are impactful submission attempts that really get the judges' boners going in MMA.
Good way to put it.
Because, we're in modern grappling. We're in that age of where everybody wants to do, everyone wants to know the leg entanglements, the new ways to get into different types of heel hooks.
Yeah.
But is that what's going to get you a victory in MMA? I mean, look, shouldn't a heel hook attempt get the same kind of respect as a choke attempt? Because shit, man, maybe you don't tap to it, but maybe they fucking ripped your ankle and your knee apart and you're limping the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that people got to think about as we move forward with more MMA stuff. Guys, we'll ask more like MMA judging stuff in future episodes. Just things like this are just super interesting to me. Let's jump really quickly into news before we recap fights. Sean.
Sure.
Real quick, the UFC class action lawsuit, Lee versus the UFC, is moving forward very fast. So expect the trial date to be announced for next year. And there's another connected class action lawsuit, Johnson versus UFC, that's supposed to perhaps get a trial date sometime in 2026. So we'll keep you guys posted with that. Again, this lawsuit pertains to fighters arguing that for a certain period of time, the UFC had a monopolistic control of the MMA industry in the United States, used that control to tie fighters into super long and perhaps unfair contracts that did not allow for economic freedom for some of these fighters. And that's a big issue going on right now. And another big piece of news, and this is something that this is connected to a fight that we covered like a few weeks ago. Silva, who beat Holly Holm, tested handedly. Positive. Sorry, what?
Beat her handedly too.
Yeah, with a submission. Yeah. But she heard again, Maria Bueno Silva tested positive for some banned substances. So she's going to be going through a suspension. And this is after she got that submission win over Holly Holm. She claims that it was a big mix-up because she was on ADHD medication that she's been on for a while, that she actually stopped taking leading up to the fight, but then she still popped for it. And so that's a continuing story as we move forward. Already the trash talk from Juliana Pena, who Silva called out, as this has started. So, but then if she wants a piece of her, she's going to have to wait probably at least another like 8 months because she's going to be serving a suspension. Any other piece of news that I missed out on, Sean, before we go into a recap?
Not that I want to bring up.
Okay, well, let's go right into it from last Saturday. UFC 292 bantamweight world title fight. Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley gets the KO in round two with a counter right hand. Starches Aljamain Sterling, gets some ground and pound to finish it off. And Sean O'Malley is the new bantamweight champion. Gets a performance of the night bonus. Sean O'Malley was a plus 205 underdog going in, so that paid off pretty nicely for those of you guys who are Sugar Sean O'Malley fans. And so what'd you think, Sean?
I thought it was actually a really good fight, considering I did pick Aljamain Sterling to win. I know a lot of people
did. I totally white belted this one.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, we were just going based on, you know, metrics and you know, like stats, because, you know, one thing that I did notice was that Sean's feints were really causing Sterling to react real crazy. And Sean actually waited for a bunch of counters as well. Sterling just had the inability to get the takedown right off the bat. I mean, there was some clinch grappling towards the end of the first round, which probably gave him the first round.
Yeah, I kind of felt like Sterling's awkward kicks and then the ability to get to the clinch won him the first round.
Yeah.
And I think what really got him in trouble was just him thirsting for the action. He was trying to reach in, trying to get to a target that wasn't really there. I think I did mention this last week that if Aljamain Sterling basically tried to turn this into, I hate to say it, but a boring fight, he would have won a decision. Instead, I think he was trying to go for an exciting fight, and then look what happened. And so Sean O'Malley's the new champion.
Yeah, I mean, very similar to like the Conor Aldo thing. That's what a lot of people are saying. But, you know, people thought that Sean O'Malley was one dimensional, but unfortunately, gosh, like he did really good about keeping his distance. And
yeah, that one dimension is pretty devastating.
Pretty devastating. And, you know, I did also heard that Sean O'Malley did have a rib injury and he wasn't able to grapple for a few weeks. So, you know, kudos to him on that. You know, the weird thing that I noticed was that the UFC, when they never, ever do this, they started broadcasting pretty much the whole entire fight and the KO on their social media directly after all of that stuff happened. And I was just like,
oh my God, wow. tell me you're rooting for a fighter without telling me you're going to root for that fighter. The UFC never shows the finishes on their social media, except this one time they showed the finish
right
of O'Malley. Right after, and not only that, Sean, they showed it from different angles. Yeah. I'm just like, what the fuck? It's like they just couldn't wait to try to bury Aljamain. Still, like, look, I'm not like a huge Aljo fan, okay? I think he's also kind of a chud, but God damn, like, they're just like, talk about no love for your champion.
No love, man.
Just really crazy, crazy to me. But I like that you pointed that out, Sean, because I thought, it's like, am I the only one thinking that this is really fucked up? And I just, and other people mentioned it to me as well, that they noticed that I was, that like the UFC did that. And so you could see like they're going to get their hype machine behind him as they move forward. I think they're hoping for him to be the next big guy. Who do they match up Sean O'Malley with next to defend his title?
You know, there was, you know, he was calling out Chito Vera, which I, you know, I totally understand that, you know, he's trying to avenge a loss and there is history between the two. You know, there's also Merab, there's also Sanhagen, but unfortunately Sanhagen is, you know, you saw him over there. He had a cast on
Merab. He's going to be out for a while.
Merab probably, I mean, I, you know, after weighing out the options there, I mean, UFC is going to probably put on put on the best money fight that they can. I think that that leads to Chito, not necessarily Merab, because, you know, Merab's a workhorse. Like, no one's chomping at the bit to see Merab versus Sean O'Malley, but people are quick to say, oh, he's ducking Merab. But it, I mean, I would love to see Sean O'Malley versus Chito. And I mean,
I think they might put him up against Chito just because I think they would see that Sean would get more likely a successful title defense against Chito than against Merab. So if they're, if you're trying to build him up, you're going to try to match him up nicely, even though Chito would have a chance to win. But I think if you're playing fair is fair, which we know that is not the business that MMA is in necessarily, it would have to be Merab. The guy is ranked number two.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because UFC is all about throwing the biggest fights possible, even though, you know, the rankings don't really say so. You know, one question I'll ask you is, Ray Longo. He was on the Anakin Florin podcast literally a day after. And, you know, he had mentioned that Aljo didn't call for an immediate rematch, but then there's also other outlets that said that he did call for a rematch. And
yeah, I've been reading that as well, that he has.
Yeah. And there's also these rumors about going up to featherweight. And my question to you is, does he get the rematch? Does he go to feather? What do you think of Aljo versus Holloway? That'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool. That would be cool. In terms of a rematch, you did mention before, like, you know, UFC is about making big money fights, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this matchup made some pretty big money for TD Garden Arena in Boston.
Biggest game.
And I think if the UFC is looking at numbers like that, I think a rematch would sell big. I think if you're a UFC businessman, you're looking at a possibility of like angling to maybe put this one like in New York or New Jersey, closer to Aljo's hometown, sell out, you know, Madison Square Garden, perhaps something like that. So I think there's money to be made with a rematch if that's the only thing that the matchmakers are looking for in terms of motivation. So yeah, I mean, I would go for a rematch with that. Otherwise, you're building him up. You don't want to put him up against Merab yet just because of the stylistic matchup. So if you're matchmakers and you're trying to protect Sean, you would probably go with Chito Vera. Yeah. Chito Vera won his fight earlier that night. Looked pretty impressive, but not like a world beater.
No.
So if you're like a matchmaker trying to protect Sean O'Malley, you might feel safe going for that kind of a matchup. And then you could just play the good guy and say, see, we're giving this guy who's ranked in the top 10 a title fight, so you can't call us unfair.
Yeah.
And so you protect your matchmaking reputation that way.
Do you think that the weight cut is affecting his performance?
I think as you age out, it has to. I think if Aljamain doesn't get an immediate rematch, I think he goes up in weight. He goes to 145, maybe gets like a big show fight against Holloway. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So I think there's money for him to be made. I'm pretty sure as a competitor, the thought of the loss really fucking stings.
Yeah.
And that's why he wants that rematch. You know, I think it's a winnable fight for Aljamain. You just got to have the right strategy. And Sean O'Malley had the right strategy.
You know, remember when I DM'd you or texted you, like right before the fight started. And I think I texted you, man, I'm fucking juiced for this. It's because, man, I noticed during fight week or during even the weigh-ins, there was that stare down that they had. And, you know, Sean was just calm. His demeanor was super chill. And then something
looked calm, but he admitted he was fucking nervous for this fight.
But I mean, very uncharacteristic of Aljo to talk. I mean, he does talk shit or whatnot, but he looked like he was kind of reaching for it a little bit, maybe to psych himself up. So
maybe psyching himself out, just trying to sell the fight. Because again, you never know sometimes in situations like this where like, is this going to make us money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But I mean,
you're
up there,
you're headlining a pay-per-view, your job is to fight, but your job is also to make money. Sometimes you have to put on a persona that's a little different in order to get that bag. You know, I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I'm just kind of shooting the shit here. Yeah. Just kind of guessing here. So it would be very interesting to see what the bantamweight division holds for both of these fighters, or if Aljo's future is at featherweight. Yeah. Let's jump to the co-main event, women's strawweight title fight. Weili Zhang versus Amanda Lemos. Willie Zhang with a 5-round dominant unanimous decision victory. She also gets awarded a performance of the night bonus. I think you and I actually called this one correctly. So we get promoted to MMA blue belt, John. Yes. Congratulations. Yes. Wei Li just showed absolute dominance in like all aspects. Now, Amanda Lemos did have a couple of moments where the power in her punches did affect Wei Li a little bit. But when it got to that point, Wei Li kept it at kicking distance. And then when it went into the grappling, she was the one initiating the takedowns. And Wei Li Zhang, one of the few MMA fighters who to show that how to effectively use a sidekick in an MMA fight to control the distance and actually damage your opponent. She sidekicked Lemos a couple of times in the chest and just made me lose my breath a little bit. What'd you think, Sean?
I thought it was pretty dominant. I mean, I didn't think that Wei Li Zhang was going to initiate the grappling exchanges. I thought she was probably going to try to stay away from that. But, you know, I was watching this fight streaming, by the way, while I was filming over at the
Fight the Man
at the what's it called? First round fights event at Cow Palace this past week. We'll talk about that later. But
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
You know, it was insane how that after that first round, I think Lemos had was getting a little bit dominated, and all of a sudden she tries to pull like this Darce out of nowhere. And then, I thought, man,
what'd you think? Did that look pretty close?
That looked pretty deep to me. Wei Li had a really good, she stayed calm and she, you know, like, I don't even know how she lasted that long. Maybe her traps or her shoulders are too big or something like that. But, probably one of the most dominant win in women's MMA history, in my opinion. I mean, if you looked at the stats, I think it was pretty one-sided. I think it was like 288 to 21 strikes at one point.
And I think she broke a record for the most significant strikes in a strawweight 5-round fight or something like that.
Yeah.
Read something like that, but the strike differential between the both of them was just insane.
Right.
It was something like 288 to 62 or something crazy like that.
Crazy shit.
It was nuts, actually. You know what? I could actually pull out some of the stats right here. This is the modern age we live in, Sean. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Let's see. All right, full fight. We got, okay. It was something like almost 200 strikes to 30. Oh my God. Total strikes landed. Insane. Insane. So congratulations to Wei Li Zhang. Who's next for the champ, you think?
You know, there were talks, you know, with Rose also going up in weight. There's talks of,
I would like to see if Rose gets her head on straight. I wouldn't mind seeing Rose back in there against Wei Li Zhang.
Yeah. I mean,
if she gets her head on straight,
you know,
that's a big if.
You know, with Rose fighting, I think it's Manon Fiorot like coming up. That's kind of like a title, maybe possibly a title eliminator. Imagine if Rose wins the 125 title, beats Alexa Grasso, and then Wei Li Zhang tries to double champ, champ up. I think that would be a pretty compelling thing, but I'm going to give it to Tatiana Suarez. I mean, you know, I've been talking about her for weeks and months. So, I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what Wei Li Zhang does to someone that tall and that has that type of Khabib style grappling.
Before we jump into other events that happened last weekend, I just do want to shout out Chris Weidman versus Brad Tavares.
Hey.
He headlined the prelims on that card. Chris Weidman coming back from a devastating leg break injury, 840 something days out of action, lost the 3-round decision versus Brad Tavares. Brad Tavares with some devastating leg kicks that kind of limited Chris Weidman. But Chris Weidman fucking was toughing it out and had a few moments where he had Brad Tavares on the back heel and almost like gave up maybe a possible TKO a couple of times. Yeah. But Brad hung in there, went back to the good game plan, kicking that leg out. So Chris Weidman saying he's not done, that he's not going to retire, but he's on the wrong side of 35. And, you know, these fighters don't get, I mean, these fights don't get easier as you get older, buddy.
Yeah. I know that he wanted to make a title run, but, you know, I think the matchmaking was a little bit, you know, suspect on this. You know, Brad Tavares has been active and he's fought the who's who of this division. I mean, he fought Izzy, he fought Dricus, he fought all kind of in within the time that Chris Weidman was injured. So it's like, my thing was, man, they should have matched him up with, like, I don't know, someone that was on their way out also, or, you know, on a higher level. And I felt like possibly if Chris Weidman would have won this fight, maybe there would be retirement, or maybe there would, I mean, his timing was just totally off, like during the fight.
Yeah, he just looked a little like a half second slow on exchanges.
And not to mention the leg kicks. I heard that there's possibly another tear in that opposite leg.
On the other leg.
Yes. One of the CLs or one of the ligaments might be messed up over there. But, you know, I'm really hoping that if he does decide to stick around, because I know Dana White was saying he should retire, give him somebody he can. Exactly. Give him someone he can retire to. I mean, like, give him someone that has a favorable matchup and maybe he can retire. Like, you give him one of those Robbie Lawler matchups where
set it up.
God damn
it. Put the fix in.
Chris Weidman, man. He beat fucking Vitor Belfort. I think that's not Uber Vitor Belfort, but
right. It's not TRT.
It's not Vitor TRT Belfort. It was post TRT, but hey, still got a win.
42 years old Belfort.
Still got a win over that guy.
A win is a win. Let's go ahead. We have a couple of PFLs we need to review real fast, Sean, because there was a PFL last Friday and there's actually a PFL that happened tonight. Yeah. So both of them are playoffs. So let's talk about last Friday's PFL first. We had the heavyweight semifinals and the women's featherweight semifinals. So in the headline, heavyweight semifinal. This is one I don't think we were too surprised by that, but Henan Ferreira gets the KO against Maurice Green. KO in round one, just left no doubt on that one, Sean. So no drama really happening with that one.
No.
Yeah. And then in the first women's featherweight semifinal, last year's lightweight champion, Larissa Pacheco, needed just like 14 seconds to actually wipe out Olena Kolesnik. I haven't seen this since Floyd Mayweather versus Arturo Gatti, Sean.
Yeah.
Pacheco threw three consecutive right hands that Kolesnik had no answer for. And it was the third one that just put her out and put her down. And Pacheco was just looking just like a world beater that she is. So, like, I mean, what was your reaction when you saw that, Sean?
Dude, it was, you know, I expected at least half a round of some feeling out, but Larissa Pacheco, man, I think she's probably the best female fighter besides like Weili Zhang.
I mean, well, now that Amanda Nunes is retired, I mean, Pacheco's making a really strong case for herself.
You know, she's shown that she just gets better and better. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
In the other heavyweight semifinal, Denis Koltsov versus Jordan Heiderman. I made a little bit of a deal of the experience factor here. Like, Denis Koltsov has like more than 40 fights.
Oh my God.
Heiderman with like 8 fights. Well, you know, the one with almost 40 fights wins by submission. Who would have thought? Who would have thought, Sean?
And he's the Russian. Come on.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean. Staying true to yourself. And in the other women's featherweight semifinal, Bay Area fighter Amber Liebrock went up against Marina Mokhnakina, and Marina needed only not even half a round to get an armbar submission on Amber. Amber wasn't able to control the distance with her length at all. Marina just was able to just go right into the grappling.
Yeah.
Any comments on this, Sean?
I just feel like
sad.
She's from the Bay, man. Like, I just think that, you know, a lot of the MMA fighters, and I saw this also at the first round fights event here in the city last weekend. A lot of people are just trying to make it based on their striking prowess. Like, I know you can strike, but there's a lot of avenues you got to fill. And that's unfortunate that, you know, Amber just can't catch a break, man.
And another heavyweight fight that wasn't in the playoffs, but just was on this card that you mentioned, Sean, from last week. Danilo Marquez versus Satoshi Ishii, the judo standout. Marquez gets a 3-round decision. There wasn't really any grappling that was able to occur in this fight. And Ishii really only came on until the third round. But by then it was too late. I mean, Danilo Marquez in rounds one outlanded Ishii 43-11. Round two outlanded him 38-20. And Ishii, like, you know, just knew he was losing, tried to come off round three. By then it was just too late, Sean.
Too late. It's unfortunate, man. He's a legend.
Yeah, well, you know, you just got to fucking like
start. Just got to retire.
Just retire.
Just retire.
Everyone retire. And tonight was PFL 9.
Did you watch it?
I was working all night, buddy.
I mean, I didn't get to watch it.
For a living.
I heard that it was actually a barn burner between Clay Collard and Shane Burgos.
Yeah, yeah. So if you guys didn't know, the lightweight and welterweight finals are set for PFL season 5. Clay Collard is going to take on Olivier Aubin-Mercier in the lightweight finals. And your boy, Magomed Karimov, will face Sabadu Sai in the welterweight finals. That one's going to be exciting. Because Sabadu Sai is just such a fucking like savage with his striking. Collard tonight had a great fight against Shane Burgos. Shane Burgos is a name you guys have all heard. And some people are calling it like a possible fight of the year candidate, Sean.
Well, I've yet to see it. We'll see.
Okay. Well, just to give you a heads up, guys, if you have an ESPN Plus, you want to go check it out. In that lightweight main event between Collard and Shane Burgos, over 600 strikes were thrown between those two over three rounds. So that's something to look forward to with if you guys review that. So that's set for PFL. They're super busy. And then really quick, One Friday Fights last Friday had a mainly a kickboxing and Muay Thai card, but they had a couple of MMA fights. Aguilan Tani of Malaysia.
That guy just
defeated your Russian homeboy, Sean, Magomed Murad Kasayev, by submission in the second round. And there was a flyweight MMA fight. Chayan Orsak from Mongolia gets a TKO win against Andrei Chelbaev, also from Russia. So your Russian homeboy is just not doing so well so far on the call, Sean. Sorry about that.
No, I mean, shit. Good for them, man.
So as you know, guys, we try to keep you up to date on things that happened. Before we jump into fights going on this weekend, Sean last weekend worked an independent MMA show last Saturday night at the Cow Palace. Sean, you want to give us a quick rundown of your experience? What was the name of the promotion?
So this is a combination between the Dragon House affiliation mixed with the URCC. They're mainly an Asian based promotion. So they combined to...
And they're super big in the Philippines. URCC is like the big MMA thing in the Philippines. Yeah. And the Filipinos love it.
This one was called First Round Fight. Obviously sponsored by Dragon House, URCC, and a bunch of other sponsors. To tell you the truth, it was actually a really good night. I mean, the beginning of the card, there was a lot of amateur fights, 13 amateur fights. Can you believe that? Ooh. 13 amateur fights.
Any particular names stand out that you want us to keep an eye out for, Sean?
To be honest, as far as like the amateurs, not really, you know, like I mentioned that there was a lot of, kind of mismatches. I think a lot of people forget that, you know, you really do have to know jiu-jitsu, man. Like it's a lot of people were, you know, there was a bunch of missed opportunities as far as like submission attempts and submission finishes and whatnot. But for the most part, the amateurs kind of showed out, you know, there was heavily Dragon House heavy. There was a lot of like hiccups going on. Like they had like this LED screen that was supposed to broadcast and stream. Unfortunately, the guy that was hired to do so didn't get the screen up until maybe the beginning of the pro fights. And there was only about 7 pro fights.
How were the pro fights? Any pro fighters we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah.
For future, you know, maybe future stars in the sport?
You know, there was this guy, his name is Brandon Olson. He fights out of, I think it's Guerrilla Jiu-Jitsu / The Resistance out in Pleasanton. You know, he's one of my old coaches guys, Darren Winiyama. He had a tough guy fighting out of Dragon House. And, you know, the guy from Dragon House was, I think his name was Jordan Mappa. Like he was landing early. And then for some reason, Brandon like turned it on and ended up kind of like staggering the guy and then pulled off an anaconda choke, you know, stuff like that.
Hey,
that anaconda, was like an anaconda choke, huh?
Yeah. All right.
So I got to meet him. So he's a really nice dude. You know, I got to shake and meet a lot of really cool people like Fabio Prado from Sacramento Team Alpha Male. Got to meet Frank Trigg. You know, he's refereeing one of the matchups over there. He's an absolute legend.
An absolute legend, or is he only absolute legend now because you got to meet him?
Only because I got to meet him.
Hey, look, and, you know, the guy's a better MMA fighter than I'll ever be, but an absolute legend, Sean.
But that dude, that dude's pretty cool. Like, I was just like, I chatted up with him a little bit. And then
there was a great interview. When I see his interviews, his storytelling abilities.
Yeah, he's very well spoken. Other than that, you know, shout out to my guy, Nico Rivera. He's one of the co-promoters. You know, he put me on. You know, gave me a couple shots of tequila, like right after the event was done, and you know, he got me fed, and you know, he took care of me over there. So, you know, Dragon House was heavily represented over there. So, if you can imagine, when their guy loses or wins, they're all over it. So, to tell you the truth, I would do it again if I got the chance. And you know, their crowd was much bigger.
Just to be clear, tell us what you were doing. You were doing video work.
Yeah. So I was in charge of doing kind of like the behind the scenes, like B-roll, like capturing the guys getting their hands wrapped and about ready to walk out for the fights and the walkouts as well. But I didn't take any footage of them actually fighting. That'll be added on to the highlight video when I get all that footage. But yeah, I was just the guy capturing the moments over there, like the nervousness and the uncertainty of MMA. So they also had a submission grappling intermission, which took about 30 seconds. You know how I knew?
So you're saying they were evenly matched.
Let's just say the guy from Dragon House was a little overweight. And then the guy that he was facing had a collegiate wrestler t-shirt on, which you kind of know what happens.
Did he have a cauliflower face as well?
Oh yeah.
And the he was probably wrestling out of the womb.
Oh dude.
And doing arm bars.
The Dragon House kid. The Dragon House kid. I was like, who is this guy? Right? Because he was like warming up in the back and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Is he fighting? He doesn't have any
legs against that pillar. What the fuck?
So it took about 34 seconds for him to get subbed.
All right. But, and by the way, guys, this happened at the Cow Palace. Cow Palace, one of my favorite venues watch anything, to be honest. I used to watch pro wrestling at the Cow Palace. One of the best concerts I've ever been to was a Metallica show at the Cow Palace. It's a big venue. The acoustics are amazing. So if you're going to see like a show, like a Cow Palace, a great place. Were they able to pack the place?
You know, when I was talking to Nico, the co-promoter, I guess when you reserve that place, you reserve sections. So like the upper sections, they didn't want people to take those seats because, you know, obviously they didn't want to like overspend. So out of, I think it was 4,000 seats that they had bought, I think they were sold out. So I think
good for them.
They put a lot of seats in that. And you know, the talent pool that they had, like all the pro fights pretty much went I think the last 5 fights went finishes. So it went by quick towards the end of the night.
Hey, good for them. And good luck to all these, independent promoters, because that is not
easy
fucking gig.
And you could see the stress on Zong and Nico's faces, because it's very comparable to when I used to shoot weddings, and then like the brides would get their period that day. It's just like
nice. Hey, no better day to do it. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was that. This last weekend's action. Let's look forward to this weekend's action. We got UFC Fight Night. It's going to happen in Singapore. Yeah. All right. So the action is going to air here in the States in the early morning, guys. I think it starts at 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
No way.
So get that coffee ready. Have, you know, call it early on a Friday night. It's headlined featherweight fight between Max Holloway versus Chang Sung Jung, better known as the Korean Zombie. In the United States, he might as well just legally change his name because nobody knows who Chan Sung Jung is. Everybody knows who the Korean Zombie is. Such a fan favorite. But Sean, Max Holloway is opening as a -850 favorite. Okay, Korean Zombie, a +520 underdog. That might be the value bet, except for the fact that Max Holloway is a lot better at boxing than Chan Sung Jung.
Agreed.
At least in my opinion. How do you call this fight?
You know, I think Max, you know, I listened to an interview he had on Flagrant One. I think it was a podcast. And, you know, he's just kind of like coasting at this point. He's already a legend. He's already a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I'm not surprised that he picked a Korean Zombie to fight, because, I mean, Max Holloway is ranked number one. Korean Zombie's been ranked number eight. This probably has a little bit of nostalgia. I'm sure they had to fight.
Can I ask you something? This Korean Zombie, what's the strategy for Korean Zombie going into this one?
What do you think, man? All he does is walk forward. So that's his...
So does he even try to... I mean, Max Holloway's takedown defense is pretty good. So does Korean Zombie even try to turn it into a wrestling match and try not to get into a firefight with Max Holloway?
This is
going to
be...
Or is he going there to tempt fate?
This is going to be a kickboxing match, and I think it's going to be a clinic for Max Holloway. I did watch Max Holloway's last fight against Arnold Allen, and you know, that was a really close fight, but that's somewhat close to what the Korean Zombie can do. You know, Arnold Allen did a really good job at trying to get Max Holloway to get on his back foot and try to get his back to the fence. You know, there wasn't really much grappling involved in that fight, but I think Arnold Allen had probably one of the better recipes. I think a lot of feints and a lot of overhands would probably serve the Korean Zombie right. But, you know, Korean Zombie doesn't really throw a lot of combinations. He's more of like a counter striker. You know, it's a lot of power. Mm-hmm. But he just hasn't been the same since the Brian Ortega loss.
I wish Korean Zombie was just a better kicker, because if you're not going to go for like strong takedowns and clinches against Max Holloway, you got to kick fight the guy. Don't get into medium punch exchanges with Max Holloway. Just wish he had that part of his game more reliably. But I am going to go with Max Holloway on this. It's going to be a hard one for Chan Sung Jung. I don't know if he has the ability to have the output to keep up with Max Holloway's punching pace. You know, and Max Holloway also become a better kicker. He showed it in that Allen fight as well. You picking Holloway as well then?
Yeah, I think.
All right.
I think it's going to be a 5-rounder. Who knows if...
You tool him up for 5 rounds?
Yeah. Max Holloway he's one of the few that has like 7+ hours of cage time. So, I mean, the stats probably lean in his favor.
All right. Okay. Well, let's go into the light heavyweight co-main event, Anthony Smith versus Ryan Spann.
Rematch.
What do you think about this one, Sean? Who you got?
You know, they had, this is their second fight against each other. And I did actually watch the first fight today as well. You know, Anthony Smith looked pretty good, but Ryan Spann, I'm sure, had to evolve somehow. And, you know, Anthony Smith has had problems with calf kicks. So I'm pretty sure that's probably what Ryan Spann's going to be trying to aim for. I would not try to grapple with Anthony Smith. He is a pretty good grappler for a light heavyweight. I think that Ryan Spann probably knocks Anthony Smith out.
All right. Okay. Any other fight on this card you're looking forward to, Sean?
Yeah, looking forward to seeing Giga Chikadze making his return. You know, he has a good dance partner in Alex Caceres. Giga was having trouble finding a fight ever since that whole Calvin Cato loss, I believe it was. You know, Alex Caceres, I think he's got what? I think he's on maybe like a 3 or 4 fight winning streak.
Yeah, man. He's just he's turned into that wily veteran that's just smart, that knows how to like win fights, bring the fight to angles and distances where he could be successful. Or it just didn't seem that long ago when he was kind of like the young up and comer that was just wild and just entertaining. And now he's just showing real good fight IQ. So it should be a good one. I like this matchup. I'm looking forward to the women's flyweight fight, Erin Blanchfield.
Ooh, save you.
Versus Tayla Santos. I'm telling you, Erin Blanchfield has a good show out for right here. I mean, you're talking about possibly her being next for a flyweight title shot. Sure. Sean, what do you think?
I agree. And, you know, Erin Blanchfield has surprised us all. I think she's, you know, the total package. Like, her grappling is good. Her striking is good. Same thing with Tayla Santos. You know, she took...
Yeah, and Tayla Santos, man, she's the real fucking deal, too.
She took Shevchenko.
So this is going to be a real tough fight between these two.
Yeah, she took Shevchenko to the brink, so...
She made that a super close fight.
Yeah. I think she might even be the taller fighter as well. So I'm very anxious to see what happens. Erin Blanchfield, I'm going to go with Erin Blanchfield because I think she just has more ways to win. And I don't know if Tayla Santos's grappling is comparable at this point. So I'll go with Erin Blanchfield. And
I don't think she's as explosive, but I get the sense when Tayla Santos does get a grip on you, man. Like, oh, man. She can latch on.
Yeah.
So she might have that ability to kind of negate Blanchfield's athleticism in a way. But we'll see. It's only three rounds. This is the kind of fight I'd be curious to see at five rounds.
Yeah.
Same here. Just to kind of see everyone's like full package and full ability. But that's going to be super interesting to me, guys. That is this Saturday. Saturday early morning because it's at Singapore Indoor Stadium. So like do people still use TiVo? No, I don't know.
No, fuck that.
TiVo. So have your streams ready or no, I don't know. It's going to be on ESPN Plus, guys. You'll be all good. Also this weekend, we've got, again, we mentioned the, so it's this weekend. Oh no, we already covered this, the PFL. So we got nothing else going on besides UFC. Nothing going on with Bellator until next month, Sean. We have one Friday fights going on at Lupini Boxing Stadium this Friday.
Nice.
Topped off with a lot of Muay Thai and kickboxing and a couple of MMA fights thrown in there as well. In terms of other combat sports, so we could give love to everybody to make sure no one feels left out. Sean is doing Jiu-Jitsu World League this Saturday in Stockton, folks. Sean, do you know off the top of your head, do they stream some of these matches or they want to keep you guys to themselves?
I don't think they do stream, but they are really good about pretty much recording every match. So that stuff will be out either on their website or on their YouTube or whatnot. But I'm sure my wife will be recording and I'll share it with you guys just to kind of, break down the ins and outs of, competing at the brown black belt level, or no gi.
And you guys have to make sure you watch it. Make sure you compliment how sexy Sean looks.
Yeah.
Also in grappling, we got Finishers Summer Bash 2 in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Nice.
And also Colorado Open is this weekend. In Colorado, but which location in Colorado they haven't announced yet. That's kind of sus. In boxing, Oleksandr Usyk versus Daniel Dubois is going to take place in Poland. For those of you who don't know, Usyk is the guy that a lot of people were kind of hoping when they Tyson Fury would fight down the line, but doesn't look like that's going to happen. So that's in boxing, Muay Thai, and grappling. For this weekend, Sean, I don't have to ask you, but I know that usually we end these episodes with like, hey, how's your weekend look? We know it looks like Sean is going to hit a twister on some random.
Oh man, that'd be sick.
But what are you going to be doing in the days leading up to Saturday, Sean? You're just chilling. You're staying away from the gym. I know you're helping out at the gym. You're helping out at the gym tomorrow for the kids class.
Yeah.
But are you going to try to avoid doing any drilling, any sparring, just to kind of like hold back a little bit? Is it going to be a struggle for you to not spar the rest of this week?
No, I think Friday we'll just do some very light roll just to get the sweat going and try to keep my weight down so I don't have any issues the next day and I can eat whatever I want. So yeah, I'll be in Friday I'll rest tomorrow after I teach the little babies their class, and then I'll be helping the competition kids right after that. So That's going to be it for tomorrow and then Friday.
Coach Sean, yeah.
What about you this weekend, man?
The rest of this week, I got, you know, some jiu-jitsu training, got Hapkido classes to teach. Probably be a small sparring class on Friday night because, you know, three of our folks are going to be resting. I told them, please don't show up the rest of the week, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah,
sometimes
that never works.
Competitors just feel like they just want to be around something. They get restless. And then get to Emeryville for weigh-ins for the Muay Thai Development League this Saturday at 8 a.m. Bouts are supposed to start at, I'm sorry.
Your corner?
Would you ask?
Are you cornering?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So, and then bouts are supposed to start at 11 a.m. Probably means they'll start at 11:10, 11:15. Nice. They've been pretty good about these. Yeah. The kids will go first, so the adults will probably won't go around until maybe like 1-ish, 1:30-ish.
Nice.
So, so that's happening this Saturday at Emeryville. If you guys are interested coming through, watch, you know, hit me up on my social media. I'll forward you the information.
Yeah, shout out to all the kids competing also. I know a few kids that are going to be competing at the MDL as well. So shout out to those kids. Shout out to anyone that's going to be competing at the Jiu-Jitsu World League as well. If you guys see me over there, please give me a dap or a fucking pound or something like that, just because I want to see my homies. Anyway, that's going
to
do it for us.
And if you guys happen to... Well, hold on, but if you happen to be wearing a Mighty Beast podcast t-shirt and you walk up to him at the Muay Thai Development League,
I'll suck your
Sean
dick.
Sean will sign your breasts.
There you Sean, go. I'll suck
guys,
your
dick. Guys,
we
got merch, so check it out. Yeah, well, Sean doesn't need a lot of reasons to suck and whatnot, so...
That's gonna
but
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, as Sean, you were saying that yeah, will do it for
that's
us.
That's gonna do it for us, guys. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. Don't forget to share it as well. Don't forget to follow us on our social media. Mine is Sean_Pierre_, and yours, Carlo.
Hopkey1 on Instagram.
Don't forget to check out Magala Jiu Jitsu out in San Francisco, Fight Culture in Daly City, Omni Movement in Hercules, and FTCC in Las Vegas.
I'm at Hapkido USA here in San Francisco. We're with our Colhaldo Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu team and also our Golden Pizza Muay Thai team. And also shout out to our friends at Pacific Ring Sports in Oakland. And shout out to Sensei John Rojas over at Sama Martial Arts in Pinole. And guys, go on Amazon, look up the Mighty Beast podcast.
Oh,
you might see some cool looking shirts there. You might want to add to your collection, guys.
Yeah. And just so you guys know, we do have a new shirt inspired by, is it art? Our listener Art,
was yeah, he the one inspired that inspired by Arthur that? Lee, our team, my teammate over in Jiu-Jitsu. Shout out, Arthur.
So thanks, Arthur Lee, for the idea. We got our Shut Up White Belt tees live now. Link will be in the description. Yeah, Amazon Prime.
Let's go.
Take care, guys. Only UFC this weekend. Place those bets. Pay us that damn money.
Peace.